Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Hello, Early Work listener. This is Rhys James, the best host of Early Work there is. Just a little pre-podcast message to tell you that I have released some merchandise. Inexplicably, I've got into the merch business at last. And I've done some demotivational posters, some anti-inspirational art prints for the post-live-laugh-love generation. Anyone who's sick of seeing those life is about the journey, not the destination type posters, those pretentious bullshit things that, you know, things about hustling and grinding that you never see in anyone truly successful's house. I've done some of those. They sort of mock those things. They're really nicely designed by Show and Tell, and they say things like, it's not enough to just dream it, you have to have wealthy parents, and the haters made me what I am today, insecure and ambition, dedication, persistence. Okay, you got the poster. Now you can just sit there. Things like that. There's some other shows, some other posters as well that reference my show in the past. One says, I wipe my ass. That's a reference to a specific joke. I do appreciate if you've not heard the joke. That does sound absolutely insane. And another says, life is about the watermelon, not the seeds. Those posters will deliver in time for Christmas if you order by the 18th of December. And they're available on my website, rhysjames.co.uk/store, or on the Show and Tell website. So do please get them. I'd love you to buy one or all of them, because I'm addicted to cash and there's not as much money in the podcast game as I expected, unless you're off menu. So do go and get those. But for now, on with this episode of Early Work. Welcome to Early Work, the show in which I ask famous performers to come on and read the creative writing of their youth. And what a youth today's guest, Catherine Bohart, had. Without spoiling my own prediction of what she was like at school, she was even more precocious than I expected her to be. We're talking bargaining to hang out at the grown-ups table, debate club dominance, seeking vengeance on a PE teacher based on essentially nothing, but leading, crucially, to a petition. And then some of the most bafflingly cryptic early work I've ever heard in my life. Is it a story? Is it a poem? Is it just an insanely verbose first-person account of a horrific war? It's almost impossible to tell. And then I read a poem that is so awful, Catherine literally screams when she hears how old I was when I came up with it. Catherine is such a great stand-up comic who has an online show called Gigless every Thursday, which I recommend. I've performed at it, and it was lots of fun. And she even has bunting specifically for the gig, so she really cares about it. So do check that out. Go and get tickets and watch Gigless one Thursday. But in the meantime, here is the early work of Catherine Bohart. Joining me today on another episode of Early Work is the wonderful Catherine Bohart. Hello, Catherine.
Hello, how are you?
I am very well, thank you. For those of you who don't know, listeners, Catherine Bohart is probably best known for the TV panel show Run Through we did together, in which she had to balance a glass of water on her head and go up steps three times. Now, would you say, Catherine, that is your seminal work or just your best work?
I'd say probably my finest hour. Do I think in the entire oeuvre, maybe there are some better moments or better known moments? Sure, but have I ever been happier or felt more accomplished? Or being in better company, probably.
Yeah. I mean, you definitely weren't happy about it. I remember
No,
you were like,
I was so annoyed.
Because I was like, if this fucking spills, also, am I allowed to curse on your podcast? It's a podcast. It's not. Yeah, we're fine.
Yeah,
I don't know what. What time are people listening to this at? Yeah, they were like, pop. Could you pop this? They said to me that, like, I think I was one of two women in the room. Like, can you pop this glass of water on your head and then just move about a bit? And I was like, there is a bald man hosting and two boys with you. Like, I was like, if I fucking wet my hair and or makeup, you have a different contestant on your hands and she won't be happy about it. So I tried to remain chill and funny, but I think the seething seeped
well,
through.
I mean, also, it's like when you do these run-throughs, they're often in the afternoon and, you know, you're sort of doing them kind of as a favour.
Yeah.
And then you do often have to go to a gig afterwards.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And they're in central London, so you're kind of going straight from there to a show. So if you did... The fact that they're expecting you to just go, oh yeah, I'll just get soaking wet for absolutely no reason for the 15 TV executives in this room to see if the format works.
And the $49.99 you're going to pay me for this 3-hour period of my day.
Yeah, exactly. My task I had to do on that was to blow up a balloon until it burst, which I don't know if you remember, I was incapable of doing.
Oh, I remember. I think of it when I'm sad.
I think if anyone
joy.
Looked at me, they would think I was unable to blow up a balloon until it burst. And the most embarrassing thing is me constantly shouting in between failing to blow up this balloon. I recently had it tested and my lung capacity is above average.
You did shout that a lot. I think even beforehand you were like, the vibe was... Watch this.
I'm going to blow up. I'm going to do it in one breath. Yeah. I'm just going to look at this balloon and pop it. Yeah.
It's going to be pretty embarrassing. Here we go. Yeah, it was.
Oh,
it was,
God. It was awful. And they made me go and practice. Oh. Anyway, I don't think that show's been made, has it? And if it has, I've not been booked.
Nor I. I don't think it has. But also, why would they make you practice that? It just occurred to me that that's just wasting... It's not like you...
Wasting my precious breath.
Yeah, it's not like you had enough time to train for it in the corridor of that abandoned school or whatever the fuck we're in. Oh, for the love of God. Okay.
What an insight this has been to the casual listener into the TV industry and the way things work. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you just got to pop to an old church school and blow up a balloon. And fail and try and not spill water on yourself.
And actually be quite funny and still not hear a thing.
Oh, nothing will come of it. Nothing will come of it. Just a weird afternoon. Just a weird little prank. Now, Catherine, if I had to guess what you were like at school, and I do, here's what I've written. Bookish, hardworking, serious. You're a natural born organiser. So some sort of committee position in school has to be a given. I mean, you occasionally are almost presidential to me, but I don't think you would have been willing to put yourself out there to run for sort of like head girl or one of the top spots, which is a shame because I think your speech would have been genuinely inspirational. So I think maybe you had that vibe, but more in the background, maybe like running clubs you set up or something like extracurricular speaking contests or something like that. The sort of kid who, now this is a bit different to what I just said, but I think you're the sort of kid who, if your mum's friend came round, you would sit and chat with the mums and you would say things about other children as if you were one of the mums. Like you might use a grown-up phrase like, oh, well, tell you what, he needs an early night, despite yourself being 11 years old. And finally, possibly referred to as Catherine Beaufort. Is any of this correct?
It's so spot on.
Yes.
I'm so impressed. The only, like, okay, I'll talk about the specific ways in which you got that right. I think the only two things that I think were probably also, like, pertinent and most definitive of me in school were, like, resistant to authority.
Okay.
And quite a loner. But other than that, like, absolutely. Okay, so bookish, yes. Hardworking, yes. Well, was I in a position of authority or extracurricular committees? I was the only school student librarian and also and also the convener of the debate society. So you've absolutely smashed that.
Wow. Oh, my God.
I had badges for both. I wore them proudly on my cardigan. Did I... need my friend and their mom to come over to hang out with the moms. No, ideally my mom would invite her friends over and I wouldn't even have to tolerate another 11-year-old.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. So you would just, were you just straight into mum chat? Is this true? Does that fit true?
Absolutely.
I knew it.
I used to barter with my mother if I set the table, if I could find a way to fit me on the grown-ups table and set the table, could I sit at it? Like I was so... I remember I got this book of Shakespeare in like translated for children, as it were. And I read all of his works, as I would refer to it. and then just bring them up at dinner. And none of the grown-ups had read him, obviously. And also I was quoting a very simplistic version of Shakespeare. So
Are you a badly written sitcom character? I mean, that is insane. So you were a child. I mean, if you were writing a bad character of precocious child... That child would inexplicably bring up the works of Shakespeare, which is the most Route 1 character description. Oh, they're so precocious, they like talk about Shakespeare. It's like, at least go with Wordsworth or something more niche.
She just keeps saying the bard. Yeah.
So I also
wanted Lonely as a Cloud. Let's be clear. I loved
Okay, fair enough. literally wandered Lonely as a Cloud as a loner at school.
Yeah, absolutely. And what was the last thing you said?
Catherine Beaufort.
Oh, no, because Beauheart is a stage name.
Well, then it would have been very clever if kids had called you Catherine. But I mean, wow.
I know.
The prediction
would
have been incredible. Okay. So did you have any... Did
but
your
you nailed it.
Name lend itself to any kind of ridicule?
No, because I had the most common name in Ireland, Murphy.
Yeah, fair enough. You're getting away with it.
Yeah.
You're getting away with it with Murphy. Did you? Yeah. Okay. So I want to go back to this Shakespeare thing briefly. I don't want to commit to the word briefly there. Actually, we could talk about this for several hours. So you would sit there, right, and you'd be at the grown-ups table, which you've begged to be on. You've said, "I'll
bartered.
Do all these chores. I'll do this work.
Bartered.
If I can, yeah. You've negotiated your position. You have. I mean, it's full Solange to just a seat at the table for you. Just means next to my mum. And then you're sat there and you'll say stuff like, I can imagine you with like almost a beaker of juice that you're quaffing like it's wine. You're holding it like a wine glass.
I would have my juice out of a wine glass.
Yeah, right. And then you're sort of being like, yes, well, I don't know if you saw, but well, of course, the play that cannot be named is actually one of the most... So how would you get this into conversation? I don't understand.
Oh, I'd just be like... Who's read The Bard? What's your favourite play? Let's talk about Shakespeare. I've recently read all of it. And if the adults didn't want to play because they were drinking and I was ruining it, then I would take the weakest one, so like a single woman ideally, and just have her ask me all of my spellings. But I would learn the spelling book in the summertime. And then be ahead of the game, obviously. So then there was like an extra section on the back of our national like curriculum spelling book that would have like, if this is a too easy kind of thing. And I'd be like, I know exactly which aunt I'm talking about. And I'd be like, come on, Marie, let's go. Let's go to the difficult section.
Oh my God. Picking off the weakest single woman.
I was trash.
To ask you difficult spellings. This is insane.
I was trash.
I
really ruined a barbecue many a time, I'd say, for a poor lady who just wanted to be outside having pims.
I thought that you'd be fine with the first half of my prediction of what you were like at school, and you'd be offended by the second half because about that precocious kid who wants to chat to the mums like they're one of the mums, because that sort of person is the worst. So I thought you'd be like, how dare you? I didn't actually think it would be that. You'd go, well, yes, exactly. Not only that, I would force them to do spellings and talk to me about Shakespeare.
I used to dust my books quite regularly. And I also, when lending to my siblings or friends or mother or aunt or uncles, would keep a journal, effectively a ledger, like my own library for my books, should people return them. I'd make notes about people returning them in poor condition, which meant they wouldn't be lent to again. I wasn't... easy company. Do you know what I mean? Being offended at this point would just be like, I know who I was. I know who I was.
I didn't go far enough, it turns out.
Nope.
So you were, how old were you in, if you're doing spelling, so this is what, you're
That was primary 10? School. Yeah.
Primary school.
Yeah.
And then okay. And then when you got to secondary school, is that when you were the library assistant?
And the convener of the debate society and, yeah.
What did that involve, being a convener of the debate society?
So when I was like 15 through 17, I would run the school-wide competition for the girls who were 12 to 15 in age, if that makes sense, for debating. So I ran their competition, so yes, an organizer. And also I debated for my school at county and national level.
Wow. Well, can you remember any of the debate subjects?
So the All-Ireland final that I won.
Oh, of course you did. You're dusting the books. You can't lose a debate.
Was on prostitution. And the...
And were you for or against?
I was against the legalization, didn't get to choose my side, but the Prime Minister of Ireland was chairing the debate. And they have to... Well, he has been a PM, like a Taoiseach since. I'm saying Prime Minister because you guys don't say Taoiseach, but he was leader of the opposition at the time, and he wore this huge gold, like, I guess like a necklace thing that mayors wear. What's the word I'm looking for?
Great. Yeah. I mean, I know exactly what you mean. I don't know what it's called, but I think the word is bling.
Yeah, indeed. So I referred to him as a right honourable pimp all evening, and boy, oh boy, did I get some laughs.
Please. That must. And also, what you've also done is you put him in a position. Was he on the judging panel?
No, he was chairing the debate, so he was like inviting.
Oh, I see. Right. I was going to say, you put him in this position where he sort of has no choice but to let you win, or it looks like he can't take a joke.
Oh no, he absolutely had to laugh along. It was wonderful, whilst being accused of being a pimp by a 16-year-old girl. So yeah.
I did one debate. I was a little, absolute little shit in English, but I was really good at English, but I was exactly who you expect me to have been in English. And
I'm willing to bet I would have hated you in my English class.
I was a bit, it was one, there was loads of lessons where it was like, I am going to be silent this hour every single time and seem shy and scared in this lesson. But there was some lessons where, I don't know, the balance of like the right friends are in it, the teacher's a bit lenient, it's a subject I'm smashing.
Yeah.
Oh, I'll just do back chat and jokes all the time. Uh-huh. And so anytime, and also it's like the sort of subject where I actually know enough about it, I can sort of do jokes that make sense. I can actually twist, you can actually ask me a question and I can reply as if it's a panel show and say a joke answer to stuff.
So
but I was doing that, which is exactly the sort of thing everyone hates. But I would do that, and it meant that the teacher insisted that I do this like team debate thing. So she was like, you need to do this debate and you need to open it because you will grab the attention, and then we'll have someone smart who's like actively bookish do the main body of the debate because they can actually say the information, and then we'll have someone, another kind of little shit person who was called Sarah, was like going to close it out. But then we did this debate, and it was like at this other school, and we were on last or whatever. And then I was talking so quickly in my intro, which was not at all funny or interesting. I then took it really seriously and was like, oh, I'll just do a proper debate with information. Was really nervous, was speaking so quickly that Sarah, who was sat next to me, I mean, probably louder than I was talking, went, slow down, like that. And it was like the most audible. It was like, how? Come on. But people still say that about to me now. When I do stand up, people go, well, you spoke a bit quick for me there. I think, well, yeah, I'm still in my speaking contest. Also, at the end of the speech, Tim, it was about rap music or something, this speech, about whether rap music was good or something like that.
Of course.
And then this guy Tim did the middle bit, quite dull speech, did the middle bit, and then Sarah stood up to close it out. I mean, she sold us out big time. As soon as she stood up, she went, thanks Reese and Tim for that excellent debate, and then it just immediately was really sarcastic, saying how shit we were, and it was like, what, we're not gonna win now.
I love that so much. So I used to be the Sarah role on the team, where I would
bring it home.
Yeah, because I used to have a really tough time getting debate partners because I was very competitive, and also nobody else wanted to debate. So I would
I would promise to write their speeches for them. And then all they had to do was like get up, read what I said, and then I would like do the rebuttal and the reply at the end. It was such a fucking joke.
So you were debating yourself.
I was debating, yeah, my own speeches. Exactly that. Exactly that. But it's definitely my first, it was definitely like the thrill of debating in school was definitely getting laughs. For me.
Yeah. So, I mean, I guessed that you were serious at school in that intro, but I suppose if you were, yeah, if your memory is the pimp stuff and getting laughed at the pimp stuff.
Oh, and sorry, I should say the value of debating in school was first winning and then getting laughs. I should have said.
So you did care enough about winning that it was like, no, I actually have to make a number of salient points.
Oh, yeah. And I wanted the humor to be at the expense of other people's failure.
Oh, I see. Right. Yeah. So, okay.
It was like constructive, destructive humor. Yeah.
Roast battle. You did roast battle.
Yeah, that's what I did.
Wow. Oh, yeah. Wow. That is brutal. Mm-hmm. So would you slag off previous speeches?
Yeah, of course.
I'm sorry for asking. Jesus, I feel like I'm in a debate with you now.
Yeah, that was very much the my role on the table, and also what I chose to be my role in life. I was like, yeah, I'll just be scathing about other people. Also, I had all that practice talking to the moms. Like,
would the audience be mostly pupils or parents?
Depended on the context. Most of the time, other pupils, but a lot of the time, I was the youngest person in the debate, so they'd be like the older girls. So I think they just found me. I mean, at the time, I think I thought they all found me hilarious, but on reflection, they probably found me absurd.
Yeah, you would have thought, oh, I bet they're thinking she's adorably cutting. And actually, they're thinking, who's this little fucking prick? Why did she keep laying into this speech I've worked hard on?
Yeah, I think so.
Oh, God. Were there any other things? So you were doing debate club, was like extracurricular.
I was definitely...
Did you do anything else like flexing a creative muscle?
No, that was my be all and end all. Like, I debated all the time. I did every competition you could go to. Did you lose?
Did you ever lose?
Oh, sometimes, yeah. And I took it really badly. Really badly. But also, I started a petition to make it non-compulsory for girls in exam years to have to do PE. Because I didn't want to do PE. I wanted to be in the library at that point. And
what was the logic of the petition? So, like, how are you actually trying to sell it? Just that this is a waste of time?
The logic was a PE teacher had annoyed me and I wanted to fucking show her that her subject was so optional I could literally not attend it. So, poor Mrs. O'Connor. So... one day in PE, it was like our last year, so our equivalent of A-levels, and we had double PE in the morning and we were doing circuit training and in the what the fuck? And then also she had gone around and asked everyone what they had had for breakfast. I think her point was to try to get us to remember like what we ate fueled our bodies and would help us with our exams. But obviously I was being a petulant little shit, so I was like, she asked me what I had for breakfast and I was like, I don't see how asking a bunch of young women what it is they've eaten for breakfast and then having them compare and contrast is healthy for any sort of like developmental growth, especially in a context where eating disorders are pretty rife, especially in old girls' schools. And she was like, I hate you.
No. She was like, look, I'd rather you just call me a pimp. You won the debate.
She was like, she's like, I'm just trying to like make sure that we're having healthy options. And I went off on a rant. Anyway, then we did the circuit training and after the class she said, Catherine, can you come into my office, please? And I said, no, I have English. And she said, can you come into my office, please? It's not optional. And I said, okay. And then she went to close the door and I said, I remember so dramatically saying, can you please leave the door open? Like she was going to do anything. And she was like, okay. And...
I mean, what you've implied is so insanely unacceptable. I mean, you're just putting her in such a mad position. The positions you're putting adults in this is literally telling an elderly man he's a pimp because he's wearing a male chain. implying a woman's going to do something weird to you because she's, well, a PE teacher and doesn't wants to shut the door just because it's a meeting, and then demanding that lonely aunties test your spelling so they can't hang out with their friends. I mean, what a childhood.
I was such a dick. And she said, okay. And then she was like, do you want to explain to me what happened in there? And I was like, oh, I just disagreed with you. And she was like, no, I don't mean in at the start of the class. I mean, in the actual class, do you think you were giving 100%? And I said, what do you mean? And she said, well, it felt to me like you weren't trying. God, I can remember every word of this. This is so insane. I've really held on to this grudge. And I was like, well, I wasn't trying that hard. We have exams and it's PE. And she said, I expect you to try and to give 110% in every one of my classes. And then she was like, and I was like, I'm probably not going to. I just kept pushing back. And eventually she called my mother because I kept saying, can I please have a note to explain why I'm late for an exam subject? I just kept saying exam subject as in yours.
Oh, you are a nightmare.
And she was like, I will explain to your teacher why you're late for English. And I was like, great. And will you be able to catch me up on what I've missed?
And oh, no. I love it. I love it. But like, Jesus.
So eventually she got so frustrated, she called my mom. But my mom, unfortunately, she called the wrong mom, right? Because she called my mother. And apparently, by my mother's recollection, it went, hello, this is Catherine's PE teacher. Her what? Her PE teacher. Oh, right. I'm just calling because she's not giving a huge amount of effort in class. Okay, but like, are one of her grades bad? No. I'm in work. Okay. And that was the end of the conversation. So then she came back, she wrote me my note, and she said, and these are my favorite words because a French teacher once said them to me too. I don't think quite a few teachers did, but she went, just so you know, this was a telling off, not a debate. And I was like, okay.
Oh, no, you don't see the difference.
I was just like, okay.
Absolutely amazing to me that no matter where they end up actually in employment, anyone who's interested in sport is obsessed with people giving 110%. If a football manager says you've got to give 110%, it's kind of reasonable. A PE teacher cannot expect the students to give 110% in PE.
I know. So then I just started a petition that people in my class couldn't
have to crush her.
Yeah. And by the way, I got it passed. We didn't have to go to PE. It's just that I'm the only person who chose not to.
It's, oh, really? So they... So the petition worked and they said, you can do what you want now. And everyone still went, no, we'll... So who the fuck was signing the petition? These people just didn't care. They just signed it because did you threaten people?
I didn't threaten people. I think they just wanted to eat their lunch.
They're just like,
They're just like, fine, whatever. Like, just leave me alone. Like, Jesus Christ. Everyone else is like, if we do PE, we get to wear our kit into school. It's more comfortable. And also, we like PE. And I was like...
And it's an hour off.
Yeah, I was like...
What I love most about that story is that was the answer to the question, what other creative things did you do at school? It was like, well, I sort of creatively ended the career of a PE teacher with this mad mastermind plan.
Oh God, I'm the worst.
You wanted to act, right? Is that right?
Yeah, so I really wanted to act. Based on very little evidence that I should, I used to do an outside of school like drama club, and then when I wanted to go to university, I wanted to study drama, and my parents were like, you've shown no aptitude or active interest in this. Why don't you get like a real degree and then you can do it at night? And then I decided that was the newest grudge that I would hold forever. And
so you started a petition to remove your parents from the decision-making process.
No, so I did that, and I did an acting qualification, a theatre degree at night while I did my history degree. And then I did an MA in acting. So
did you do any, were you, during like the school years, were you doing any performing?
In Ireland, there was this thing called transition year, which was your fourth year in secondary school where you could opt to skip it, but most people didn't. And they've since made it compulsory. So in transition year, you would do things like they did like a musical and a play and lots of performance art and also lots of like learning to be entrepreneurs, like setting up businesses and all of this absurd stuff that wasn't really that academic. So I was one of the like six people in my year who skipped it. Because I was like, A, I fucking hate this hellhole, I'm out. And B, I was like, I'm sorry, what's the point of it? Like, I was like, we should be learning. Why am I wasting?
Yeah, no, this adds up. This makes sense in your narrative.
I was like, the fuck? Also, everyone else did because they like wanted to stay with their year group. Whereas I was like,
your best friend was that teacher.
He teaches all the years, so that's fine.
Yeah.
And I skipped it. So, no, I didn't do any of that. And also, like, I really. I wasn't a collaborative child.
I know. Okay, so you wouldn't be willing to. Yeah, I suppose you would. Do you think you'd have been annoyed at not getting the exact part that you wanted if you had auditioned for something? Would you have been like, this is ridiculous?
No, because it was a musical and I couldn't sing. So I was like, what the fuck use is that to me?
So what about when you started acting and doing this MA and all that sort of stuff? Did you presumably had to do performances then?
Oh yeah, but by then, like, university had crippled all of my self-confidence and like the academic competition of being in a place where my peers were also all as intelligent as I saw myself was like profoundly debilitating to my sense of arrogance. And thus, by the time I got there, I was like, obviously I'm trash at this. I am trash. So don't worry, it all balanced out. I now simply aspire to have the confidence I had when I was 14.
Yeah, I mean, that debate club confidence.
Oh my God.
It never comes back. Lucky for me, mine ended on my first debate. I was like, yeah, of course. When they were like, you need to do the debate and open it. I was like, well, yeah, obviously.
Yeah.
Why did you get it? I'll also do the middle and close it, thank you. And then I did one debate and was like, oh, I am terrible at this. I'm too nervous. I can't do this shit. And then it was like, all right, never again. Yeah. Goodbye.
I think a lot of us feel like if we could get back to where we were, like that level of confidence. I just thought I was the smartest person in any room, that I had only interesting things to say, that my purpose was all-consuming, and that people should be thrilled to hear me.
I think you've just sort of described the mantra of every podcast.
Yeah. It's the same as prepubescent girls. Yeah.
Joe Rogan and prepubescent girls are have the exact same logic.
In that they also all hate other women.
So, okay, let's get on to the early work. What is it that you have brought that... I mean, the phrase want to read is probably incorrect, because I know you're dreading this, but what is it?
It makes me feel physically sick. Okay, so... I had an English teacher who I adored, Miss Hillen. I thought we would be great friends outside of school. When people asked if they could go to the bathroom, she'd say, whether or not you can or can't. People would say, can I go to the bathroom? And she would say, whether or not you can or can't is beside the point. The question is whether or not you may. And I was like, oh God, I love her so much. Anyway.
Oh my God. She sounds like Yoda.
She was such a patronizing, she just hated kids and she hated us. And I loved her so much. Mm. But she, amidst her disdain, would set us quite a lot of like creative writing essays where she'd just show us a picture or give us a color or whatever. And we had to write. And, clearly this is something I wrote and my mother kept for no apparent reason. So I guess it's like a creative writing. It's like an essay, but I don't know what. I remember we watched a film, but I don't know which film it was that we were meant to be inspired by for this.
Great. Well, we can try and figure it out.
Oh God.
So the was the task, watch this film and then write an essay.
Yeah. And the essay is called, I don't know if it was set as...
If the essay is now called Saving Private Ryan.
No, but you know what? I think it was something like that. It definitely was like war related. Oh God. I have to tell you that I have tried to read this in advance of this and I physically cannot make it through. It's called The Break. I was 14 when I wrote it. It is fucking absurd.
Wonderful.
I hate it. But I have to remember that I was 14. So
yeah.
So it was
It's all part of the process. This is what got you to where you are now.
It was 18 years ago. I can forgive myself, can't I?
Yeah, exactly. This is all part of the process that got you to this point, your dream of appearing on the Early Work podcast.
Okay.
And without this...
I wouldn't be here. Oh, God. Do you want me to read it?
Yes, please. Give us a section of it. Give us the opening.
Okay. All right. Let me just zoom in on this. Okay. My mother sent it from Ireland via photograph. Okay. The break. Oh, thank heavens. The sun is finally showing its face, a crack of hope, a thin line of light on this straight line that is my way. My way towards release. Release? Question mark. They will say when I tell them what I felt when I told them. Told them what it is. Only I have to tell my message, my words, my task, my glory. I can't even. Should I keep going?
Yes, please.
This hill of stone, hard and cold, is my last. For today, I will say all I have... No, I will say all I have to, give all I can, and then I shall have earned it. Earned it, they will say, when I tell them of my journey. For what did you do but run? When I tell them of my struggles, because of course they won't have seen, have heard, have felt, or earned the right, my right to tell, to scream, to shout from rooftops what I will have when I reach the end of this, my straight line. That is... my way.
Okay, I'll stop there for a sec.
Do I feel sick?
What is happening? I mean, what the fuck? I mean, I do not understand how this is written at all. Is it a poem?
It sounds like a fucking trip. What? I don't think it's a poem.
It is one of the most confusing things I've ever heard in my life. I mean, there's bits of it that are just wonderful to hear. Obviously, my glory, a straight line that is my way, that's come up a few times. An Irish person from a Catholic school opening with thank heavens feels extremely on the nose.
But also the straight line that is my way feels like one hell of a closeted lesbian. Oh, God. Yeah. Oh, it's so bad.
What I really like about it is you keep talking about giving all you can so that you've earned it, which to me sounds like advice from your PE teacher. You might as well have said, I'm giving 110% in this battle.
It doesn't make any sense. It makes me feel
how
unwell.
How far through are we at the moment?
Okay, we're currently, I'd say, a third.
Okay, let's have the next third.
Okay. Oh, God, it makes me feel so anxious. Okay. Ooh, a bit of a tonal shift. The sun is now turning. Now, I realize, turning on me. But why? Why in my last run, my last hill, my last battle, do you betray me, my daily ally? I missed you. I've underlined you. At night, I thanked you by day, and yet you turn. Why? I'm sweating. It is the sun. I'm blinded. It is the sun. It is the sun. And yet I don't have the will to care now. I think I was high. My message does not care now. We don't need your help anymore. We, I hear it from them. Yes, we, as it is only my having my message that will get me up my steep, hard and cold hill, my last thin strip of line. Ha! Exclamation mark. A corner around which I will go and tell and scream. Scream my poem, my novel, my epitaph, my words.
Oh my God. Okay, so...
What is going on?
The film I think it's based on is Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind. You are obsessed with the sun. You're obsessed. It's just about the sun and hills. What film is this? This is the Teletubbies. Are you sure you didn't watch the Teletubbies?
have a horrible feeling it was like, it was something World War II-ish, and I don't feel comfortable about it. And it's, also, where did I even learn epitaph? And why did I?
The sun is turning on me. You're betrayed by the sun.
My daily ally.
Yeah, so I'm waiting to find out what the betrayal is.
I'm Ginger. You're not my ally.
Yeah,
what's
I suppose.
Going on?
So you call it your daily ally, and yet it betrays you. But the thing that happens next, the way the sun betrays you, is it shines on you and makes you feel hot. So in what way was it your ally before that? My daily ally, the sun, who's normally not there.
Or normally
which is helpful to me.
Is normally facing a different way, which can't possibly be true because the sun follows the same pattern, surely.
The sun facing a different way. You're thinking of the moon, I think.
I think so too. Oh, God.
When you were 14, if the moon came out, did you think, oh, the sun's turned his back?
You bitch.
I'm glad you pointed out the fact that, I mean, I wouldn't have said anything, but the fact that you're this is the most obsessed with the sun poem or piece of literature I've ever heard, and you were writing this as a ginger person in Ireland. I mean, that is extreme. What I do like is that the premise, you keep mentioning this hill is my last, right? You keep saying this is my last hill. I've turned the corner. I'm up another hill. This is my last hill, which obviously is about dying in battle or whatever. But it does match with what you were like as a kid, because dying on a hill is exactly your brand. You did it with a PE teacher. You did it in the debates. You did it at petitions. This is it. I'm committing to this and I'm dying on this hill.
Oh,
and then you wrote this baffling
God.
Story where you would die on a hill. Okay, well, I think let's save the ending of it for our finale, which, I mean, best of luck to the producer of this, trying to put some music under whatever the fuck's coming next, because I don't know what you could possibly do.
War drums? I don't, like, yeah. Battle cry? I don't...
It's going to be something like that, isn't it? So it now comes to the time when I must score your work on three categories. Those categories are originality, pure teen horniness, and Mickey Mouse Club, Ryan Gosling, Ryan Goose score, which is how close is it to your work now? Does it show the potential of the star I now know you to be? So first of all, originality. It's difficult. I know you say you're influenced by Joyce, but it's difficult to see past a 5 out of 5 here because what the fuck is going on? I mean, I've never heard anything like it. I mean, when you said, oh, I think we were told to watch a war film and then write about it, I mean, this isn't what I expected at all.
Mm-mm.
You're mentioning, there's a lot of cliches in it, I suppose. My glory, thank heavens, and like my way, betrayal. But you're betrayed by the sun and then the sun just shines on you. And you keep my message. This steep, hard, cold hill. I mean... I'm just going to have to commit. I'm going to die on the hill of giving this 5 out of 5 for originality. And if anyone wants to complain, feel free. I'm already dead.
Thank you so much. That means a lot. My mom kept it for 18 years. So clearly somebody else agrees with you.
Exactly. Yeah. Okay. And if you give me your mum's number, I'll chat to her and tell her you gave 110% on this podcast. And hopefully she's not at work.
She would absolutely love it. She'd
Good.
Love it.
Okay. And then I'll ask her what she's read of the Bard. And we can have a lovely chat. Pure teen horniness, I might have to go into negative figures, you know, because this is, without a doubt, the least horny thing. This is actively unhorny.
I was not a sexual teen. I wasn't. I didn't kiss anyone until after school. I had no desire to.
The only time when I thought there was any chance is when you started aggressively saying steep, hard. but then I was like, no, it just leads to another hill. Straight line is my way. I mean, there's nothing I can interpret from this that could even be metaphorical. So it's going to be a 0 out of 5 pure teen horniness.
That's completely accurate.
Finally, yeah. Mickey Mouse Club score, Ryan Gosling, Ryan Goose. How close is it to your work now? Now, I hope you don't mind me saying this, but I find your work now to be comprehensible. I understand the words you're saying when you say them, and they are full sentences. And you don't really seem to... I've never heard you finish a joke on stage and go, my glory, in the laugh. So, I mean, I'm struggling to find any links, really. Betrayed by the sun.
What about... Ha!
Yeah. So, well, I suppose, yeah. With that in mind, so I'm not going to give you any Mickey Mouse Club points for this specific work, but for the debate club stuff with the pimp, for the petition, I mean, there's a lot of stuff that's like, okay, I kind of, there's a vibe I kind of can get across, and you starting things too early, and this is what you did with this, I will go for a 3 out of 5.
That's
for
fair.
Mickey Mouse Club.
That's fair.
But it's more the stuff around the work than the specific words, because the words are insane. So that means you get 8 out of 15.
Nice.
Which is a perfectly reasonable score, especially given that, I mean, you could have got a minus 10 for the horniness score.
Yeah, and indeed for any of the others. I mean, let's be honest. That's completely fair. I understand your decision. Thank you.
And now it comes to the time where I must read you something of mine. Now, this is quite a short poem, and I just found it this morning. I'm still looking for I've got loads of these, but we're now on episode like 28 or something, which means I've read at least 28 things already.
How old were
you? I'll tell you after. This one I found, and then I looked at the date when it was created on my laptop, and it didn't make me feel good. Okay, this is, it's called We Pay for Pathos. Okay. We pay for pathos, we invest in interest, but our vested interest won't redress the inquest, lest we forget that we want to rest in peace, so why reap the scrap heap and scrape away at the weak and the deceased? I remember when the Tama got me, when I used to have to feed my Tamagotchi. No virus, just obsession, a lesson in technological breeding. But now my Twitter needs feeding, my form space is receding, but my Facebook looks ace, our relationship is over because I need my space.
Oh my god. Okay.
Now, just to clarify, there's a chance those are two separate poems on the same document, because they are not in those two stanzas are not at all connected.
No, they're definitely connected by a white boy trying to rap, and I love that so much. That's so great. Okay, so the thing that's most alarming and most apparent is how recent that evidently was.
Yeah, there's some references in it.
Yep,
there's certainly some
sure
references
are.
In it.
Your Twitter needs feeding.
Yeah, what the fuck does that mean?
I think it's your new Tamagotchi.
My Twitter needs feeding. Yeah. So also form space. So it definitely ages it in a certain way, because form space, I don't even really remember what that is.
I don't know what that is.
So that was like a flash in the pan social network, I think, from this year only.
What?
So not this year. Not this year now. I mean, the year this was written. Yeah.
I was like,
you're
hello?
Looking at your face. You wrote this today.
Oh my God.
I was 19.
Better. That's so great. I'm so glad to hear that.
And that means, even worse, that means I had begun performing stand-up comedy by this point.
Had you had sex at this point?
I think I was having sex while writing this.
Oh my god.
Yes, I believe so.
Oh, so there's no excuse.
There's no evidence of that. There's no evidence of that.
Oh boy. Okay.
Also, interestingly, I should point out, this poem is actually based on the film Dunkirk.
Now I get it.
Yeah,
really,
there you go. My form space is receding.
Yes.
You see?
Oh, you should have said. Okay, so shall I score it?
Yes, please. So first up, we have originality out of 5.
I'm gonna say, what with the rhyming and the incredibly overused references and the quick turn to how it's actually at the end, shockingly, about a breakup, I'm gonna say
that's just, I wanted to do the MySpace joke. It comes out of nowhere.
I'm gonna say 1.
Okay. That's fair enough. So you're telling me that you have heard something like that before?
I'm saying I've seen white boys rap, yes. Yes. Okay.
Okay.
And indeed, I've YouTubed spoken word.
You've seen it. Yeah. You've seen anyone attempt something before.
I've
chuck a couple
I've
of references
known
in
a
there.
Man to own a beanie. Yeah. Okay.
Pure teen horniness is up next.
Oh, I think this is dripping in self-perceived smug sex appeal.
Yeah. Are you familiar with the Instagram account Beam Me Up Soft Boy?
No, but I can imagine how that would fit here.
Yeah.
I'm going to guess this guy thinks he's real deep and real sexy. And also that as much as he thinks it was out of the blue that there was a breakup at the end, in truth, that's what he was thinking about the whole time. So I'm going to say...
Oh, I suppose, yeah, actually, we pay for pathos.
There you go.
Is the opening line. And then it gets to a pun about MySpace at the end being a breakup. We pay for pathos. All those dates I had to pay for just to feel like this. We invested interest, but our vested interest won't redress the inquest. I mean, the best line is, lest we forget that we want to rest in peace. I mean, what the...
It doesn't mean anything, but I love it so much. I'm going to go with 4 on the horniness scale. Yeah.
I think fair enough. Really making up for a lack of horniness in the war story on the other side of the Zoom with non-stop horniness on this. And then finally, Mickey Mouse Club, Ryan Gosling, Ryan Goose. What potential does it show for the me now? How much does it represent my vibe?
I think... it is actually a bit representative in that, like, it's much poorer quality wordplay, but you still engage in it. It's less succinct, but still more succinct than it could have been. So, like, brevity's on your side, which I think is still true of your form. It's laddie in a different way, which occasionally you can be in a much smarter way now.
Sure, I accept.
Yeah, I think it. You're good on Twitter.
And this references that Twitter exists.
Yeah,
is
so clearly
saying?
You were practicing then.
Yeah, my Twitter needed feeding.
Yeah, so I don't want to do your current work a disservice by saying that this was like, this is the template. I'm not saying that, but I can I can see how you got from there to now. Also, it doesn't have much shame. I think a 3.5, 4. Would you be insulted if I said 4?
No, not at all. You wouldn't be the first person. There've been far more embarrassing poems than this that people have said, well, that's exactly the same. I saw you do that in your show. So I'm quite happy for this to just... Oh, you've made a number of points to justify this score rather than Lolly Adepope saying, wasn't that from your debut show? So I'm more than happy to accept a 4 out of 5. So that means I get 9. I get 9.
Nice.
You get 8. That means I technically win the episode. But
that's
the
fine.
Message of this podcast, as always, is that we're both losers. There are never any winners. So now all that's left is for you to read us the final section of this baffling war tale called The Break, which, you know, best of luck to producer Neil. Whatever music he's going to put under this, we'll fucking find out.
Shall I read it?
Yeah, let's go for it.
Mine. Mine alone. They can hear but will not keep. May forget, but I will not care as I and my message have run. We ran, we screamed, we climbed, we ate, we drank, we breathed, we poured. Poured, they will ask. I know they will ask as I know they will not comprehend. Yes, I will reply. Into and through the other until we became ourselves, us, we. Oh, my corner. Our corner. It nears. It nears. We turn. I turn. My song turns and I clench. We clench. We clench for the release. It's gone. We are gone. I'm done. It ends. And so, I have my break.
Oh my God. Oh my God.
It occurs to me that maybe it was just really close to lunchtime.
Yeah, this is about break time, yeah. Oh, I clench. The bell's gone. Right, now, we have our break. Finally, we have our break. Lunchtime. I mean, there are... It just continues the form we know. There's a couple things that... I mean, I was surprised not to hear, based on the way you word a lot of this stuff, is when you say, like, we poured. Or no, did you say? You did. You said, poured, they will ask. It's always the weird, the verb, and then they will ask is this running theme. I have definitely written a poem which includes the phrase, us, we. I've definitely written that. So it's good to see that. And I would have probably been 26. We clench was nice to hear, given that that's what you've been doing throughout. And the most satisfying part for me of that little section is that no matter how artily and with the that verbosity that you write this, you are still a teenage girl because you at one point go, I'm done. I'm so done.
I'm done with this.
You might as well have said, and now the bullets are coming towards me. Can you not? That's what it sounded like when you just went, I'm done.
It's wonderful. So true. Oh God, it's so bad. It made me physically sick. I'm so glad that's over.
Yeah, that's generally the feedback. There we go, Catherine Bohart. I really enjoyed the chat that we had. I'm a big fan of finishing my own poems on this podcast. Someone immediately saying, oh my God, in a way that it's very clear isn't positive. Analysts will be trying to decipher what Catherine's work meant for centuries to come, which is perfect because her catchphrase is, they will ask. I love Catherine's vengeful streak. I love her desperation to win by calling anyone who stands in her way a pimp. Well, actually, not people who stand in her way, the judge of the competition. That's how confident she is. She's willing to make the judge look like a pimp in front of a group of children so that that judge has to give you the win out of pure discomfort to look like you can take a joke. Do go follow Catherine on Twitter. Make sure you follow her on Instagram, all that sort of stuff. Drop a rating on this podcast. That's right, drop. Yeah, that's right. I say drop, and I say it about ratings on podcasts. That's the sort of person I've become. So drop a rating. Oh, God, please don't mark me down because I said drop. Still give it 5 stars. I've said too much. I feel things are only getting worse here. Goodbye.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.